Happy New Year, peeps. I hope you've had a lovely Christmas. Now on with 2024 and the road to your public exams. Today, in this freebie podcast, I am going to focus on smaller parties. Now, in the specification, that includes all parties except the Tories, Labour, and the Lib Dems, as these are the three national parties who routinely win over a million votes. The question I'm going to answer is this: evaluate the view that smaller parties are highly influential in UK politics. Now, this covers the political parties topic, yes, but also requires knowledge of the electoral system and the impact of first past the post, and also has links to voting behaviour, as tactical voting will need to come into your answer somewhere as well. I think the best thing to do with, well, pretty much any essay is to define the non-political word in the question and to ensure that your definition is broad. In this case, the non-political word is influence. Ask yourself what counts as influence or significance or importance. I am going to judge influence by establishing a three-part definition, a set of criteria, if you will, with which to decide on whether smaller parties are important in UK politics. So I will start by looking at the representation of smaller parties in the UK Parliament and in the devolved bodies. I will also judge influence by the participation of smaller parties in government, both centrally and regionally. And finally, I will judge influence by the impact that smaller parties have had on party policy and upon the electoral fortunes of the larger parties. My direction is somewhat controversial, but I will be making the case that smaller parties are enormously influential despite the first past the post electoral system and all the other hurdles that smaller parties face, such as the lack of funding and an over-reliance on charismatic leaders. In each section, I'll do what you should do in your paragraphs and lead on the weaker argument before trashing that and then making the case for the stronger one. Oh, and the best answers in these sorts of questions, particularly on the party system, political party influence and electoral systems, do not simply focus on Westminster, but also on the devolved institutions. You should also consider the factors that affect the influence of political parties, namely the size of a government's majority. When a government has a large majority, often it can ignore the calls by smaller parties for a change of policy. But when it has a small one, perhaps like David Cameron in 2015, it feels it has to listen to those smaller parties like UKIP in 2015, which actually eventually led David Cameron to call for a referendum, perhaps to save his own party's bacon. Without further ado, though, let's get on with the show. So let's come on to the first theme, the representation of smaller parties in the UK Parliament and in devolved bodies. And let's tackle the elephant in the room, the first past the post electoral system. The argument follows that the winner-takes-all system, this first-past-the-post system, penalises those whose vote is thinly spread, in essence, pretty much all smaller parties, and rewards those whose vote is concentrated, in essence, the two largest parties. Hence why UKIP in 2015 won 3.8 million votes, but only won a single seat to the House of Commons. Hence why the Greens in the same election year won about a million votes and also received just one seat. UKIP won almost 13% of the vote in this election, but had virtually no representation. Meanwhile, the winning party received a disproportional share of the seats. The Tories won in 2015 37% of the vote, but 51% of the seat, a winner's bonus of 14%. This unfair electoral system reinforces the two-party system in terms of seats. In 2019, the Labour and Conservative parties won between them 87% of the seats available. Due to the knowledge that first-past-the-post produces results such as these, voters then cast their vote tactically for one of the two main parties, usually the one they hate the least and can stomach, which further perpetuates the two-party system. An estimated 6.5 million voters, according to the Electoral Reform Society, voted tactically in the 2017 general election. Since defeat is likely, smaller parties then fail to attract the sums of money required to be successful, which then leads to a party funding gap with the two main parties. They may fail to attract consequently, the required talent in terms of staff, in terms of candidates to fight a successful campaign. Consider UKIP. Since its heyday in 2016, before Nigel Farage quit as leader, it has had seven leaders since this time. Yet, let's not over-egg the pudding. For every weak leader, there is a pioneering representative. Caroline Lucas became the first Green MP in 2010 and held her Brighton Pavilion seat and has held it ever since, only recently deciding to step down at the next general election, probably likely in 2014. Multiple parties are bankrolled by members or by single donors. How do you think UKIP, the Brexit Party and the Reform parties keep going? There are currently 11 parties that enjoy representation in Westminster. Some parties can achieve concentration, not just Labour and Conservatives, particularly if those parties are strong in a particular region or nation. When I mean concentration, I mean concentration of support, concentration of votes. In the 2015 general election, the SNP won 56 seats in the House of Commons, making them comfortably the third largest party in terms of seats. They remain the third largest party in the House of Commons, gaining 48 seats in 2019. Northern Ireland, meanwhile, has its own political system, its own political parties that make up the Northern Irish Assembly, including Sinn Féin and the DUP. Other parliaments use different systems and thus are able to win seats more easily. Not every single devolved body uses first past the post. The Scottish Parliament is elected using the additional member system, AMS, which is a hybrid of first past the post and proportional representation. And that offsets the advantage the larger parties have and tops up the seat shares of smaller parties. The Green Party currently has 7 members of the Scottish Parliament. In the Welsh Senedd, which uses the same system, Plaid Cymru has 13 seats. Thus, we can see that while first past the post allows two parties to dominate, in Westminster particularly, there remains room for smaller parties to have representation even within first past the post, and indeed to somewhat thrive in those devolved bodies that use different electoral systems. So we can see, therefore, that smaller parties can matter if we are judging representation seats in elected bodies, particularly if those elected bodies have more proportional representation systems like Scotland, like Wales. After the break, let's consider the impact, if any, smaller parties have had on governing the UK. Last section, we focused on representation and whether small parties have influence because they have MPs and members of the Scottish Parliament and the like. And I came to the conclusion that actually they're doing okay, especially in those areas that do not use first past the post. I'm now going to turn to the participation of smaller parties in government, both centrally and regionally. So on the face of it, it's an open and shut case. They're not influential. Smaller parties have minimal impact when we consider which party is in government in Westminster. It's the Tories, and they are not small. Indeed, only the big three, Liberal Democrats, Labour and Conservatives, have governed the UK, well, ever. Most of the time, either Labour or Conservatives have governed and governed alone. The Tories governed alone for 18 years between 1979 to 1997. Then Labour followed with 13 years under Blair and then Brown. And now the Tories have ruled for 14 years, albeit with the 5 years of Liberal Democrat coalition. But as stated earlier, the specification doesn't count the Lib Dems as small. So there's the evidence, if it were needed, that smaller parties aren't influential because they don't participate in the central government. But here is the issue. Small party influence is determined by the majority that the largest party enjoys or doesn't enjoy. When it doesn't, when the larger parties do not have a large majority, they have to make deals with smaller parties. In 2017, Theresa May's government lost its majority at the snap election. She was forced then to sign a confidence and supply agreement with the DUP to prop it up. While the DUP was not officially in government, the Tories could only stay in power as a minority government with DUP backing. Furthermore, let's not be myopic. Not everything is about Westminster and central government. Owing to the AMS electoral system mentioned earlier, the Scottish Government is currently a coalition with the Greens and SNP, two smaller parties. No large party has ever governed alone since the Scottish Parliament was created in that nation. And no large party has formed the government in Scotland since 2007. It's been the SNP, either alone or in coalition. In Wales, Labour currently has no majority in the Senate and therefore has to rely on votes from smaller parties to pass its programme. In Northern Ireland, with its distinct political parties and culture and highly proportional STV system, we see the DUP and Sinn Féin as the largest parties when they choose, that is, to actually work together. Thus, small is beautiful in everywhere other than Westminster. We do have small party influence in government, as I've just shown. But I keep telling my students that you shouldn't just focus on whether a party has seats and whether a party is in coalition or in a minority government or what have you. You need to focus on what they are doing when they're in government or when even they're not in government, but how they are campaigning, what they're campaigning on, their impact on policy. So let's focus our third chunky paragraph, judging small party influence when it comes to their impact on that, on policy. Again, we could make the case that smaller parties make the political weather in terms of ideas and policies, perhaps because they are associated with the three core ideologies of liberalism, conservatism and socialism. This rooting of these core ideologies has meant that they have introduced lasting policies when in government. The welfare state was the brainchild of a liberal peer, but implemented by the Labour Party after 1945, which marked the high watermark of social democracy. Thatcher's Tories drove privatisation in keeping with neoliberal ideas that found a home in her party. Also, the larger parties have incorporated other ideas throughout time, which has meant that the main parties are broad churches. And that means it's difficult for the smaller parties to gain traction. More recently, it is the Sunak Tories and their desperation to stay in power that has seen them ratchet up the tension over immigration. The Rwanda plan is all theirs. We could also make the case that without the Conservative Party, there would not have been Brexit, which is not a socialist, liberal or conservative thing. It's in a way, it's a unique policy and it's a larger party arguably making the weather there. Yet here is where I think we can push back against the idea that all ideas flow downwards from the larger parties to the electorate. Larger parties often respond to smaller party policy ideas if there is an electoral need to do so. That is to say, if they feel threatened by the appeal of what the smaller party is offering the electorate. The anti-EU movement gathered steam via UKIP and its charismatic leader Nigel Farage. Its showing in the 2014 European Parliament elections forced Cameron to promise an in-out referendum in the Conservative 2015 manifesto, and we all know what happened the year after. Arguably, Brexit would not have happened in the manner it did, i.e. a hard Brexit, without the Brexit Party standing down its candidates in Conservative-held seats in 2019, allowing the Leave vote to concentrate itself in one party rather than be split between two. This decision helped the Tories win an 80-seat majority in December 2019 and then resulted in Brexit happening, a hard Brexit to boot, just a month later. Thus, while these small parties seldom win seats, they have a huge effect on who does, and then a lasting effect on what that party does, that larger party does, when in government. Sunak's rightward shift on immigration is arguably down to fear that anti-immigrant Tory voters could back the third incarnation of UKIP, the Reform Party, at the next general election. Progressive smaller parties on the left side of the political spectrum have also had an impact on policy, so it's not just these right-wing groups. The Greens have had an impact on transport policy, for example. London Mayor Sadiq Khan promised to expand the ultra-low emission zone, or ULEZ, which in effect is a tax on polluting vehicles, in part to woo over Green voters in his re-election bid in 2021. Labour have sought to concentrate the progressive left-wing vote by promising to spend £28 billion in green infrastructure should it win the next general election. The Scottish Government has pushed ahead with plans for 20 gigawatts of electricity to come from onshore wind farms, a faster rate than that proposed by the government in Westminster. This owes itself to Green participation in the Scottish Government. Smaller parties seem not to be able to influence whole swathes of policy, I grant you, but single issues, Brexit, Green policy, etc., I think that's different, and I think they do influence those issues at specific times. This is certainly true of the SNP, whose victory in the 2011 Scottish parliamentary elections persuaded David Cameron, the Conservative Prime Minister, to facilitate an independence referendum. While that referendum failed, much of Scottish politics of the last decade has centred upon how to cater for, or whether to cater for, or whether to challenge SNP demands for greater autonomy. Its very existence, the SNP's very existence, has affected the actions of Tory governments. The Conservative blocking of the Scotland's Transgender Recognition Act owed much to its desire to appeal to unionist Tories north and south of the border, who loathe the fact that a party that wants to break up the union is in power north of that border. Thus, we can see that smaller parties have proven extremely significant in the past decade, and many of the major splits in British politics over single issues have been significantly influenced by them. Brexit, the future of the union, and, well, saving the planet from man-made pollution. Summarise then, let's summarise. Smaller parties are immensely influential in UK politics. Despite the first-past-the-post system, they have gained representation to the House of Commons and have meaningful representation in the devolved bodies as well, since these bodies are elected proportionally. They are also participating in government in those bodies and can have real influence on who gets to form the government if a party lacks a majority of seats in Westminster. Perhaps most significantly, in recent years, smaller parties have had an outsized influence on policy and have panicked the governing party. They have affected the outcomes of general elections to boot. Okay, so that's it for now then. I hope you found this pod useful. If you have not yet subscribed to Plus, then let me tell you a little bit about it. For just £1.99 a month, you get access to the complete back catalogue of A-Level Politics Show podcasts, all 141 of them at the time of recording. You also get access to two bonus pods I produce each month, along with the freebie like this one. You'll be able to access every single transcript of every single show if you listen to your pods through Spotify. Good, eh? Deets are in the show notes. But that's it from me. Okay, take care, folks. Bye-bye.